I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. And I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole wide world to hear. I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. How sweet it would be if I found I could fly. Well, I'd soar to the sun and look down at the sky. And I'd sing, 'cause I know how it feels to be free. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart. Remove all the bars that keep us apart. And I wish you could know how it is to be me. Then you'd see and agree that every man and woman should be free. Then you'd see and agree that everyone should be free.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 1st of August 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, and here from deep in the heart of Texas at the end of a tree-lined boulevard behind the Golden Gates in the Citadel of Unvarnished Truth. Please welcome from the GR headquarters the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good evening, Bears Bartlett.
Good evening. It's starting to get dark earlier now.
Much earlier. I just got out of bed, and it's getting dark already.
Ah, dear. Wait till we go live, mate. When this is a video as well as audio job, it'll be interesting. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. Hey, you know, we're practicing with our new video dream list, and it looks like we're well on the way to producing a video stream of the show, so...
Well, that's scary.
Yeah, you'll have to get dressed.
Well, I don't want to do that. But then, of course, our viewership would drop off, even if our listenership didn't.
Yeah, we don't want to scare little children, mate.
Or even full-grown adults.
Family, today may be one of the most interesting discussions we have ever had about faith and belief and so forth. So stick around and enjoy the show, where we say it is as useless to argue with those who have renounced the use and authority of reason as to administer medication to the dead. Or at least that's what Thomas Jefferson said. I wanted to talk a bit about the new website, Michael.
Wonderful.
Now, we've already mentioned on earlier PowerCast that every subscriber is going to be getting a Gospel Revolution pharosectomy certificate, or a certificate of a completed pharosectomy. And I'm looking at Jeff Robertson's right in front of me. I haven't given it to Jeff yet because I'm not sure if he deserves it or not. But, hey, he's making good movies. Did you see his latest movie, The Consequences of Freedom?
I haven't seen it, no.
No worries.
I'm hearing a lot about it, but I've not watched it yet myself. So.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those days. I can see it, fella.
I could tell when you asked the question, you were thinking, uh-oh, I think I just asked, this is going nowhere.
I'm going to put these back on Facebook so people can see exactly what they're going to get. I've got wall plaques here from the Gospel Revolution, certificate of completed pharosectomy. I'm looking at the one with your name on it, and it looks really sharp. It's going to be gold plaque on a black background that you'll be able to stick on your wall, and when the Jehovah's Witnesses knock on your door, you'll be able to say, oh, have you got one of these? And they'll say, where can we get one? And you'll say, funny, you should ask. So, well, there's nothing like having your own pharosectomy, particularly when no sharp objects were used during the application of your pharosectomy.
Although blunt trauma could have been used.
Oh, man. Well, it certainly was used getting your whatever that is.
Yeah. Whatever it is. You're the one that came up with that name.
It's actually,
and you can't even say it.
Actually, I stole it off Wayne Jacobson, but hey, who cares? Let's just settle down and steal each other's songs, shall we?
Why not?
Yeah, The Consequences of Freedom. Great movie, Jeff. And his opening line was, I didn't blabber as much as I did last week. But if you head up there to youtube.com, go to channel Gospel Revolution 1, and there you'll be able to see Mike Williams, Jeff Robertson, Josh Tenney, Kate Benham, all kinds of stuff up there, and a place where you can send your friends and if they would like to have a taste of what the Gospel Revolution is like. Also wanted to send a shout-out to Bob Hines. We were going to chat with Bob or Wade Brewer this week, actually, Mike, but it just didn't work out, and we'll probably have Bob Hines on next week.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to let all of our listeners know that you can download his book from www.thetruegospel.net. Also, don't forget Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. We'd love to see the numbers growing even more up there on Amazon. Send your friends there and see what... just buy one. Just buy one and give it to your friends.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
Buy another one.
Yeah. Yeah. Buy a bookcase to put 100 in.
There you go.
Okay. Mike, what would you like to say? We've got an hour to fill.
Well, I really enjoyed that program about Roger Williams. He literally came up with a new way of thinking. We've been so concerned about what we think that the big issue has been missed, and it's the way that we think that needs to be addressed. Roger Williams was definitely one of those who changed the way he thought, not just what he thought about.
Can you explain that? What's the difference between the way you think or what you think?
Well, what you think is your conclusions. The way you think is how you come to those conclusions.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And many times the way that we think is so infantile that we are absolutely persuaded of what we think when we don't realize that the way we came to those conclusions may have been based on faulty logic. There really are faulty ways of thinking. When I define logic, I have to come up with my own way of describing this. I know that there's more official ways, but when I talk about simple logic, I'm talking about emotional logic, which I think is the very first form of logic that we have when we are born, the only one we can relate to. And that is that, you know, if I cry, I get fed. If I cry, I get my diaper changed and whatever. We depend on emotion. And then, of course, by the time you get to 2 years old, that begins to wear thin. And unless a parent knows how to teach a child to communicate what they need on a different level and they become confident of that way of communication. Parenting normally traps a child in simple logic. If I can win you emotionally, I win my case, and therefore I determine what truth is, because it takes time to be a parent. I wish I'd have known some of this when I was a parent. But by the time they're 2 years old, the only thing the parent is doing is ignoring what the child is saying, you know, and they'll stand and I think they're actually trying to make the transition out of emotional logic into at least a more advanced form of logic. But a lot of times parenting forces the child to stay in emotional logic because the parent's tired. You know, it's been 2 years now. And now I know, you know, mama, 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 daddy, 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 daddy. And then finally, so then he gets the attention. So they kind of get trapped there. So the thing that we're doing and addressing in the gospel revolution is the way people think. We can't say that we advocate that people think for themselves and then get all upset at the conclusions that they draw. I believe that Roger Williams came up with a new way of thinking, and it was recognized to be at least dangerous anyway, which is what happens when people realize that they may disagree with your conclusions, but they find that the way you got there is almost irresistible.
Now, we've covered this three different forms of logic in the Bible that we find. We've covered this before, so it doesn't hurt just to go over it quickly again. That emotional logic you were talking about, whereby babies cry and then get fed, what's the next one?
Well, linear logic, and probably the biblical way of describing linear logic is the law. And there's one statement that Paul made about the linear logic of the law, and that is, if you break one, you've broken them all. And that is the truth with linear logic. Linear logic is like a chain, and each link is what causes the chain to exist. If any link in the chain is broken, the chain is completely useless.
So this baby that used emotional logic to get fed and changed, he's now in grade 3, and he's learning that 1 plus 1 equals 2, 2 plus 1 equals 3, 3 plus 1 equals 4. Now he's learning not emotional logic, but he's learning linear logic, is he?
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, linear logic, it's a wonderful form of logic, but it is designed to bring you to a certain place that no matter which direction you go, you're lockstepped into coming to a conclusion. And that's what the law was given for, was to bring us to faith. And the law has done its job. Linear logic has done its job.
So would this be kind of, in a modern sense, would linear logic look like, we have a lot of car accidents every year. We have a lot of car wrecks. People who wear seatbelts are more likely to survive in a car wreck than people that don't. Therefore, you should wear a seatbelt. Is that like linear logic?
Yes, and it can continue on either side of that also. And then we get to dialectic logic. I think that that's actually the term that people who teach logic refer to it as. I noticed this in Paul's writings more than 15 years ago that I recognized this pattern of teaching that Paul had. The one thing that I also noticed about the teachings of the other writers of the New Testament, Peter and James and John, is that they did not have dialectic logic or comparative logic. They teach more in linear logic. It's obvious that they still teach in a law form because the logic is still linear. It is not comparative logic. They don't stop and compare this mindset with that mindset.
So in James' writings, I'm thinking of when he says, now here's how faith and works interrelate. You remember how Rahab did this and that was faith for her.
Yes.
So we have this situation. What we can draw from it is this. Therefore,
yes, one has to connect to the other. One does not deliver you to another. And I think that's really the breakdown in understanding the gospel, is understanding that the law, the Psalms, and the prophets were designed to bring us to another whole form of logic.
What's an example of this dialectic logic, mate?
Well, let me tell you the official terms of it, and then we will go into it a little bit more. The term thesis is something I think most people understand. This is your thesis. This is what is said about a subject. This is declarative. This is what we have. We know this, 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 and this. This is your thesis. Now, for any dialectic logic to begin, there has to be contradictions to that thesis. The way political parties keep on each side is they avoid dialectic logic like the plague, because you cannot accept any contradictions to your thesis, which puts people on opposite ends and nobody ever coming to grips with an answer, because politically you cannot change your mind.
So dialectic logic is about presenting both sides of an argument. Is that what you're saying?
It is first presenting this logic, and then if there's any contradictions to that, then it is presented. It's not necessarily coming up with, okay, this is your opinion, this is my opinion, because that only leads to debate. It is the issue of an individual taking a line of thinking and being willing to accept that there are contradictions to this line of thinking, this thesis. Now, if there are no contradictions to it, then you've got a thesis you can hang on to.
Now, in the study of logic, do these contradictions have a name?
Antithesis.
Oh, an antithesis, an antithesis.
Yes,
okay.
It would be the antithesis. And
what do you do with those two?
Well, they have to be synthesized.
And if you can,
if there's a possibility to synthesize them.
So you're going to try and bring them together.
Yes.
And they have a baby.
Yes.
What do you call the baby?
Well, it's a new thesis.
Okay. I'm pretty slow with all this stuff, and I'm getting it. I'm starting to get it. So this little kid used emotional logic to get fed and changed, went to school, learned linear logic, 1 plus 1 equals 2, 2 plus 1 equals 3, and so forth. He grows up, ends up in a courtroom where the lawyer says, now you say that on the night of the 15th you were at such and such, but we have a witness that can place you at the scene of the crime. What do you got to say about that? He is actually now experiencing dialectic logic. On one hand this, but on the other hand that.
And most people just learn denial. They just learn how to deny. They don't learn how to even work through a contradiction to the thesis.
So if this guy's lawyer said, Your Honor, the kid has a twin brother, for crying out loud. It was a twin that was there. Now you would have a synthesis or a new thesis.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, you're doing really well.
I'm trying.
As we present a thesis, and this is where most of us stay stuck, the willingness to learn comes from having this other form of logic, and that is accepting contradictions to our line of thinking if there are contradictions, instead of being dismissive of them. If we want to learn, we have to deal with the contradictions.
So you're saying that Paul used this dialectic form of logic to make a point?
Yes. In all of his writings, this form of teaching is there. And this actually evolved out of a conversation that you and I were having back last year. We were talking about Romans chapter 10, and at some point The only thing I remember about the conversation is that we were reading through or discussing the fact that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. And then you read at a very appointed moment the very next line, but didn't they all hear? Didn't the word go out into all of the world? And the term world there means Roman Empire. And I was just stricken by the fact that we had possibly read all of Romans 10 completely wrong. And from that point, I dove into it. I drug you into it with me. And what an incredible time we've had over the last few months of looking into this and began to look at this in as much depth and as broad of a picture as we possibly could, and possibly think about faith in a whole different way. What I had failed to do when I was teaching Romans chapter 10, I failed to see Paul's dialectic form of teaching, even though I've been the one who's been telling people about this style that Paul has, and I always look for it, but I failed to pick up on this. So from that point of the conversation on with you on the phone, this exploded inside of me. It's one of those things where that when you're teaching something, you're teaching as much as you know, but you know there's more there than what you're teaching. But that day on the phone with you, Barris, really grabbed my attention because I saw a contradiction to the thesis. As you read into this, this teaching in the middle of Romans, in fact, all of Romans, it becomes striking. Oh, the things that I missed. I want to go back and reteach Romans all over again. There were things that I didn't tie together as clearly as Paul did. Paul spoke about a man lying with a man, a woman lying with a woman was against nature. It just wasn't the natural way that things are done. And of course, therefore, it is concluded that it is ungodly. But the fact of it is that Paul brought up three things that were against nature in his writings in Romans. Between Romans chapter 1 and chapter 3, he brings up circumcision as being against nature. And by the time you get to Romans chapter 11, he's bringing up the Gentiles being grafted in as being against nature. So he brings up in this one writing three things that are against nature. So the logic, this is the logic that Paul was trying to break down. Everybody teaches that Paul was against homosexuals. If you take Paul's dialectic logic and what he was comparing, he was trying to help the Jews understand, which is the ones he was addressing about the issue of a man laying with a man and a woman lying with a woman. It came to a consensus. Yes, we all understand this, right? This is against nature and therefore ungodly. So he established the thesis. Things that are against nature are ungodly. Yay! I mean, you can almost see the torches in the village coming to drag away that which is against nature, therefore ungodly because it is against nature. And then Paul, almost sneakingly, it seems, brings up, what about circumcision? Which one is that? Is that by nature? Which one is by nature, circumcision or uncircumcision? So if we have established that that which is against nature is therefore ungodly, we now have a contradiction to that thesis. We Jews now have a problem because the reason we could judge these people is because it is obvious this is not how the plumbing was designed. This is not how babies are made. This is against nature, therefore ungodly. We Jews now have a problem because this circumcision, which one is that? So he totally dismantled the Jews' ability to condemn homosexuals. And then in chapter 11, he talks to the Gentiles and totally, totally strips their ability to condemn and says, you were grafted in against nature. So his whole opening salvo was to prove to Jews that if your line of thinking about that which is against nature is therefore ungodly, then you have judged yourself to be ungodly. And if you Gentiles who also judge that which is against nature is therefore ungodly, then you yourself have a problem because it is against nature for you to be redeemed.
So in that chapter 11, he says to the Gentiles, it was against nature to have you grafted in, because grafting is not a natural process. Growing is a natural process. If it was done naturally, the Jews would not have been cut out and you cut in. So he says to the Gentiles, if the Jews could have been cut out, don't you get high and mighty, you might get cut out too. Now where is all your belief that this is so permanent? Now where is your faith is a permanent deal? And so he's actually demolishing this concept. Oh, it's very interesting the way he works.
Yes, he's destroying both of their concepts of redemption is what they're doing. And he has used the homosexual community to prove his point. This is really brilliant.
Now, what happens? You've got a thesis. So he's saying, this is true, isn't it? This is what you say, isn't it? Yes, that's what we say. Well, I'm saying, what do we do with this?
Yes.
And you say, you got an easier question? Well, how about if we put it together like this? Could this work if we look at them both as parts of a whole? We're going to synthesize this and we're going to show you what it really means. Now, it seems to me that what religion has done over the centuries and over the millennia is this. We looked at the thesis and we considered that to be the truth he was teaching.
Yes.
Or we looked at the antithesis and we considered that to be the truth he was teaching.
Exactly.
Instead of looking at the new thesis or the synthesis and saying, oh, is that what he was teaching? I'm thinking all of those people in Christendom who said the Jews, they ought to be just exterminated because, don't you know, God cut them out to make room for us. We're the real people.
Yeah.
So instead of actually seeing the synthesis, we've taken, and it's really, again, it's cut and paste Christianity. It's pigeon religion, where you take this one verse out of the thesis or this one verse is out of the antithesis, and we say, see, truth, it's in the Bible. It's got to be true.
Yes, because we have a chapter and a verse. And that's what we're taught to think, is if you have a chapter and a verse, it's the truth, which is the most ignorant thing to possibly be a way of deriving truth of any writing. It doesn't make any difference what writing it is.
Well, that reminds me of Gene Scott when he used to say, a fellow looking for a direction from God sticks a pin in his Bible and he comes up with Judas went out and hung himself. And he says, well, that can't be direction from God. So he tries it again and sticks his pin in the Bible at another place. And the verse says, go and do thou likewise.
Yeah.
So you got a verse.
Barris, your point is really sinking in with me. There's many groups on this earth that are persecuted and rejected. And one of the groups, obviously, is the Jewish community and the Holocaust that ensued, and then, of course, the gay community. And we have the history of that certainly going on to this very day, even though it is changing, whether some people's minds have changed or not. But here in this book of Romans, if we were to be able to read the way that Paul wrote, we would see Paul's synthesis.
Gospel revolution.
Welcome to Pigeon Religion. Really, it's for the birds.
Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is the word. Well, the bird, bird, the bird's the word. Well,
lies are nice, lies are nice. Every Sunday you cheat me. Far too smart to have a heart. You look happy to please me. Religion so faint you can smell the scent of your fermenting krautkraut. Your dogma sucks, and that's the crux of my contempt for your guilt trap. Our religion is better than yours, and we have more cash to prove it. We the sheeple, we love our steeple, and logic will never remove it. Our pastor perfectly hears from God, and he said you were sinful.
fact that we make no sense at all proves that we're the Lord's people. Pedophiles and corporate fraud, the greatest show on earth. Name it and claim it and then shift the blame. It is how you screwed me, Prince Bert. Your honey pot is so baited so well with guilt and hell forever. Heaven is nice for a price and disagreeing never. So let me tell you now, the best thing you will hear ever. We are one through the sun, judgment's done with forever. Your good news gospel say gays go to hell, with Arabs and atheists and Democrats all, plus 90% of the world's population. Your God is not very successful. Daddy's a priest in the Vatican. My sister sells freedom from sin. My mommy sells prophetic words from the Lord. And my, how the money rolls in. Rolls in, rolls in. Oh my, how the money rolls in, rolls in. Rolls in, rolls in. Oh my, how the money rolls in. It rolls in, rolls in, rolls. Everybody now, my, how the money rolls in. It rolls in, yeah, oh, rolls in.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Paul is the one who equated homosexuality with circumcision. He didn't compare it to uncircumcision. He said it's the same as circumcision because both circumcision and a man lying with a man and a woman lying with a woman is against nature. That's not the natural way. And then Paul's conclusion, what is the new thesis? For it is God that justifies both the circumcision and the uncircumcision. So he's dealt with the Jews biased against homosexuality or anyone else on the face of the earth. This just happened to be the comparative that he used. And then he approaches the Gentiles in chapter 11. Their belief was that the Jews had been cut off. The out of context teaching of chapter 1 has led to the persecution of the gay community for 2,000 years. The out-of-context teaching in Romans chapter 11 has led to the persecution of the Jewish community for the last 2,000 years. And both of them, Paul corrected those theses, as you pointed out. And he literally says, so you say that the Jews were cut off. Then he takes that logic to them and says, well, you were grafted in. Well, if you were grafted in and they got cut off, then you're calling this security with God. There's not much security there, because if the original branch got cut off, what hope do you have? Beware, unless you stay in the faith. Paul's whole letter to Romans was disputing that faith was required of man to be redeemed by God.
Well, hold on. You're destroying my childhood, my memories. Now, we used to sing this little ditty. Romans 10 and 9 is a favorite verse of mine. Confessing Christ as Lord, I am saved by grace divine. And we used to go home singing this on the tram. And now you, Mike Williams, want to tear down some of my most cherished childhood memories. Well, stuff you.
Yes. 40 different ways.
Are you saying that, I mean, that Romans 10 and 9 must be almost the second best known verse in the Bible, that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth and believe in thine heart that Jesus died and Christ and go blah, 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 thou shalt be saved. Are you telling me it doesn't mean what it says?
That is not a true statement in the gospel.
Who are you, Mike Williams? Okay, give me, in 30 seconds, tell me why. Well, what is this thesis, antithesis, synthesis surrounding this verse? Tell me.
Well, Paul says all of that, and of course, with the final comment about that, with this rationale of believe in your heart and confess with your mouth, then the verses after that, he says, "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." That is from verse 1 all the way down to through that verse, which I think is verse 13, where he says, "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." Then he should follow up with some affirming statements to that. But instead, what do we get? We get just the opposite to him affirming that this is the truth. It says, "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." Right? That's what we've been saying all the way from chapter 10, verse 1, all the way down to verse 13. We've been explaining this to you. So therefore, the conclusion is that it is man's responsibility to call upon the name of the Lord. It is man's responsibility to believe, and God to respond to his belief, right? That's what both you Jews and Gentiles have embraced. And that's what's causing the big fight between you, because you're doubting each other's faith as to whether or not you really are a part of all of this or can be a part of this. But okay, there's a problem here. If they have to believe, how shall they call on him whom they don't believe? And how shall they believe in him whom they've not heard anything about? And how shall they hear without a preacher? Oh, and it can't just be any preacher. It has to be a preacher that was sent by God. And how shall they be sent unless they're called? So he comes up with four or five contradictions to the thesis of chapter 10, verse 1 through 13. He says, if this is true, we've got five major problems with this thesis. And then comes back to the conclusion again. So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word. Isn't that the conclusion of this? We've already presented at least four contradictions to this thesis. And then he says, so then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word. And then the very next sentence is the one that you started reading when we were on the phone last year. And he says, but I say, didn't they all hear? And suddenly, Barris, I'm telling you, that's where all of this led to, was this conversation with you on the phone. And, but I say, did they not hear? If faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word, what do you do with the fact that they heard from Jesus himself?
The word himself.
Absolutely. If they heard from Christ himself and they were all concluded to be in unbelief, then what are you telling me that it requires belief to be redeemed or to be saved? Now, see, the way that I skipped the rock across the water was I reduced the word saved to not be implying redemption. I reduced it for the sake of my argument, I reduced it to salvation being the renewing of the mind and the saving of the soul. Now, Paul did teach on that, but let me tell you, in the book of Romans, he didn't teach on it one single time. All of Paul's teaching on salvation in Romans is about redemption. It is about what happened to the entire world. I did not have the right to then imply that Paul was teaching what he taught in other books and transpose that into this letter, because that is not what this letter is about. But you see, it fit my thinking, and I didn't understand, so I imposed that on this. I was wrong. I was completely wrong. One of my greatest joys in life is finding out that I'm wrong. I've done it a couple of other times in my life.
So what was his bottom line on this? What is the bottom line of the synthesis?
Well, the way that this is all synthesized is by his quotes at the end of chapter 10 about Isaiah. He says, but Isaiah is very bold. Now, this is so powerful. he quotes two things here, and I'm doing this all just from memory. I don't have my Bible open or anything. He says, but Isaiah is very bold and says, I was found by them that did not call or ask for me.
And that is on the tail of his statement, how shall they then call on him, and how shall they believe?
Yes.
And the other statement, which says, for whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved. And now he's saying that Isaiah already said it, if you only had the eyes to have read it.
Yes.
Say what he said, Isaiah said again, bro.
He says, but Isaiah is very bold and says, I was found by them that asked not after me and that did not seek for me.
Romans chapter 10, verse 20.
Yes. And then the next one addresses the last his comments about, so then faith cometh by hearing and hearing by the word. And he addresses that by the next statement. But unto Israel he saith, I have stretched out my hand all day to disobedient and gainsaying people. So faith does not come by hearing. They heard and they refused to believe. In fact, not just they refused to believe, it is explained in detail they couldn't, because the Spirit of God himself kept everybody from believing, so that this type of institutional religion could not take place, that it could never be institutionalized, that whosoever believes in their heart and confesses with their mouth will be saved. They were blinded to the truth so that this form of institutionalized religion could not take place. That it could not be that whosoever called upon the name of the Lord would be saved. So that it could not be that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. Because we've proven that it doesn't happen that way.
And as an introduction, if any listeners are saying, well, that's just not right, because I know that Romans 10 and 9 says if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart, all the good stuff's just waiting for you. As an introduction to that, he says in verse 5, for Moses describes the righteousness which is of the law. Now, and it says that the man which does these things shall live by them. And then he goes on to say the words near you, that if you'll confess with your mouth, he is describing law righteousness, not God righteousness. This whole thing, the clues are there. Then they're better than clues. They're in black and white. They're in print there for us to see. We've just plain ignored them or tried to transfix on verses to prove our own philosophy. What we've done really is we've just text-proofed our own predilections to believe one thing over another. He says, for Moses describes the righteousness which is of the law. What is the righteousness which is of the law? Well, that if you confess with your mouth, that's the righteousness which is of the law. And he comes down at the bottom, as you said, mate, this is good stuff, by the way, Michael. My word, this is good stuff. He comes down to the bottom and he says, for whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord will be saved, right? Well, I was found of them that sought me not. Wow, how powerful is that, Michael?
And as far as faith coming by hearing and hearing by the word, Isaiah said, I've stretched out my hand all day to a long disobedient gainsaying people. let me tell you, I've been talking for a long time and nobody's listened. How in the name of God can you say that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word when Christ himself was here? And look what happened to even the disciples.
Well,
the unbelief that was in them.
Let's think now. If faith comes from hearing and hearing from the Logos, when he had his own disciples, he wasn't awfully successful. That's right. Yeah, no, it's coming back to me now.
See, that's exactly what Paul is pointing out, is this misconception, these two misconceptions. These two misconceptions are the premise and the basis for the building of institutionalized religion, i.e. Christianity. These two false theses. Number one, whosoever believes in their heart and confesses with their mouth will be saved, for whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. That is an incorrect statement. And Paul proves it, not in another letter, in the verses that follow. The other incorrect thesis that all of Christianity is built upon. How they define it is many different ways, and that is this statement. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word. That is not a truth in the gospel. Neither of these are truths in the gospel. In fact, just the opposite to these is the truth in the gospel.
I'm going to read from the bottom of chapter 11.
Oh, wonderful.
For God has concluded them all in unfaith, that he might have mercy on all.
Yes. Man, I tell you, that's time to speak in tongues if you're going to do it ever. This conclusion of Paul's, and you were in Romans 11, 20?
32. For God has concluded them all in unbelief that he might have mercy upon all. Yeah.
So here is, Barris, as you've pointed out, here is the total synthesis of this issue of faith in Romans. For as ye in times past have not believed God, yet now you have obtained mercy through their unbelief. Even so have these also now not believed, that through your mercy they also might may obtain mercy.
Well,
for God,
let me ask you this question. According to this verse, how do you get mercy?
According to the verse, mercy comes through unbelief, not through belief. It's very good.
Crikey.
Why would you need mercy through belief? You need mercy through unbelief.
Isn't that amazing? For while we were yet enemies of God.
Yes.
An enemy wants to kill you, right? Like string you up. Oh, hang on. That's what we did.
This is an amazing book. And then, of course, Paul goes on. For God hath concluded them all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. He's talking about Jew and Gentile. And this was the back and forth. When you read through the book of Romans, it's back and forth. He's talking to the Jew about their prejudice, and he's talking about the Gentile about their prejudice. And both of their prejudice was based in their thinking that they needed faith to be included. And the false assumptions that just because something is against nature, that it's therefore ungodly. Paul overrides every bit of that foolish discussion and says, for God hath concluded them all in unbelief that he might have mercy upon all. You can only have mercy on unbelief. You cannot have mercy on belief. He concluded all in unbelief so that he might have mercy on all.
What is it, verse 4? While we were yet without God, hope.
For while we were yet sinners?
Yeah, for while we were yet sinners.
Christ died for the ungodly. Right. And then, of course, as I've pointed out for many years, then Paul goes into his...
I'm leaving that for you so that you can really...
Yeah. Paul goes into his euphoria. This is nothing short of a euphoric, almost out-of-the-body experience. Paul has taught himself happy. He has gotten to the point, and he has finally gotten his point across. He's worked through circumcision. He's worked through faith. He's worked through unbelief. He's worked through the prophets. He has come up with a whole new thesis. It is not those who believe. It is those who did not believe that God had mercy upon. All of your doctrine is completely wrong. And Paul ends with this on this teaching.
And this, by the way, is pretty much the end of Romans. I mean, you can read 13, 14, 15, 16, but all of that is pretty much about administration and just...
Salutations.
Yep, all of that. So here he is. Here's the bottom line.
This is the end of all of this teaching in chapter 11. This is where the teaching wraps up about faith, about circumcision, about Gentiles, about Jews, about law, about unbelief. Oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor, or who hath first given to him? This was the whole debate. who has first given to him that it should be recompensed to him again. Jew or Gentile, faith or obedience, circumcision or not. Who has ever first given to him, and it shall be repaid unto him again. For of him, through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen. And to this doctrine, my dear friend Barris, there are no ifs, ands, buts, or maybes that I have found yet. I'm still waiting for them. Bring me the contradictions. Bring them on. I want to hear them. What are the contradictions to this absolute truth of the gospel? And we're willing to look at any of them.
Says, through the death of Jesus, we are made righteous, if and as long as you do what we tell you, follow the leader and don't ask questions. All you need is Jesus. Oh, and be like us. In religion, they will tell you Jesus died for the sins of the world, but if you ask the average churchgoer whether somebody else is going to heaven or not, they will say, maybe. Did you know that every single major doctrine of the modern church, Jesus never spoke about even once? That's right. Look up your church's statement of belief, and without trying to make Jesus say what he doesn't, try and find in plain black and white where Jesus actually taught that. You know, you're going to find something very interesting. Every single one of those ifs, ands, buts, and maybes depends not on what Jesus said, but on what your particular brand of religion teaches. And in Christianity alone, there are 40,000 brands. What flavor would you like? In the gospel, there are no ifs, no buts, no ands, no maybes. When Jesus prayed that he and we would be one in exactly the same way in which he and his Father were one, just ask yourself this. Do you think Jesus gets his prayers answered? Remember, you just aren't that powerful that your opinion of God could ever trump God's opinion of you. And he has made his opinion clear. He says that you are the righteousness of God in Christ. He says you are his righteousness. God says you are his righteousness. How could that possibly be unless you and he are one? Tell you what, let's just take our ifs, ands, and maybes and our buts out of the way and just take Jesus at his word. What do you say?
So it is, folks, that we must leave you. We really appreciate every single one of our listeners, and we especially appreciate those who, by their financial support, ensure that this weekly PowerCast always goes out on time. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always open for a Facebook meetup at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no religionists were harmed in the making of this program, and thanks to Marcel Roche in the Netherlands, all the gospel, all the time, is being broadcast 24-7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee, and from deep in the heart of Texas at the end of a tree-lined boulevard behind the Golden Gates in the Citadel of Unvarnished Truth.
It's good evening from. I'm always waiting to see where this is going. I always got this feeling that we're going to have one more gate to go through before we get here. It's good evening from Mike Williams. Thank you, guys. Goodness gracious. Thank you for coming along on this ride. This one will have to be one you're going to have to listen to a couple of times, I think. This is powerful. This is a turning point in the gospel revolution. And this has been coming on now with some really wonderful collaboration with Beres and Bob Hines and others. And this is a powerful place. And I don't know that anyone's ever come to this declaration about this teaching in Romans chapter 10. I don't know whether they have or not, but you now know it, and it is powerful. And it is truly brings upon us this euphoria that Paul expresses so clearly at the end of this teaching. And we wish you the best, guys. We love you so much. Thank you for all your help. Everyone's well, and we'll talk to you again.
Have you ever come on anything quite like this extravagant generosity of God, this deep, deep wisdom? It's way over our heads. We'll never figure it out. Is there anyone around who can explain God? Anyone smart enough to tell him what to do? Anyone who's done him such a huge favor that God has to ask his advice? Everything comes from him. Everything happens through him. Everything ends up in him. Always glory. Always praise. Yes. 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 Don't forget to join us again next week, family, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
It's always better. Our last PowerCast was broadcast. Wait, I think I'm completely lost.
Good, don't worry. Just let it go. Let it go.
Wait. No, you got to help me here. Was our last PowerCast while I was in Canada? Have we done another one since then?
We've been drinking, have we?
Man, I'm in a fog this morning. It's one of those mornings. It's cloudy and heavy clouds and very still outside and, you know, occasional showers. This morning I should have stayed in bed. You know, I shouldn't be doing that.
And we're just talking about your mental state.
That's all, yes.
Yeah, we did one, buddy. We did Freedom number one, before you went to Calgary.
Oh, and then we did the one about Roger the next week.
Yeah, last week. And in the middle, you were
Roger.
Talking about Dear Roger, yeah. And in the middle, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood or whatever it was. And in the middle, you were talking about faith in Calgary. So, I mean, we can pick any thread you want.
Well, yes. Well, I would like to let's pick up with what happened in Calgary and the things that were, because, that would be good.
Okay.